This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, everybody. Extra Time with me, Liam Horobin, presented by Betway. 19 plus, please bet responsibly. Ontario only. Maybe you've been making some futures bets on the Premier League, which started a couple of weeks ago. Or maybe you had a little bit of an Arsenal winning 1-0 today, which they did against Crystal Palace in a somewhat exciting game. It was kind of a weird one. I don't know. We'll get into it later on. But yes, welcome back to Extra Time with me, Liam. I've been away. I think Brett did two episodes, maybe one. I don't know. Told him to kind of do them as he could. It was a busy time. Women's World Cup was going on. People are working hard at the 90th minute. Meanwhile, I was going to say soaking up the sun in England, but anyone from England would know sun doesn't really come out there. I was soaking up a lot of rain in my jumpers, I can tell you that much. But yes, I've been away in England for the past 3 weeks. Spent a few days in Paris as well, which was an experience. We'll call Paris an experience. I'll get into Paris quickly. Paris looks very nice. The Eiffel Tower was very cool to see. I went all the way to the top. Then it's cool to see Paris from that vantage point. I'm actually very scared of heights. So I did it because I thought to myself, I was like, when am I going to come back and do this again? I was already halfway up. May as well go all the way to the top. And it was worth it. The elevators look a little sketchy as you're going up and down. And you're thinking, boy, oh boy, one little error and I am flat as a pancake. But we got up there, got down safe and sound. It was all good. Very exciting day on the Eiffel Tower. What else did I do there? I got on one of those hop-on, hop-off buses where it drives you around and see all the sights. People say they're a bit of a rip-off. They probably are. I don't even know how much it was, to be honest. But also, I wouldn't have seen it all if I didn't get on one of those. And it was quite easy to just jump on, jump off whenever I needed to. Or hop-on, hop-off, as it's advertised as. So that was cool. The Arc de Triomphe was probably my favorite thing to see. That thing is massive. And I believe the Tour de France had just gone through there recently or is getting ready to go through or something. So there was a little bit of that around there too. So that was really cool to see. Louvre. Saw the Mona Lisa. A bit overrated. If you're going to go see the Mona Lisa, maybe let me know on this too. Would you line up to see it? Or would you do what I did and just simply walk down the side, snap a quick picture with your phone, and off you go? I feel like that is the best way to see the Mona Lisa. I couldn't imagine lining up, unless you're a big arts person, I suppose. And that's fair enough if you're into that kind of stuff. And have at her. I'm not going to hold you back. But the ironic thing about the Mona Lisa, I think, is... So the Mona Lisa is not... It's your average size painting, I would say. It's no great size. It's behind some... I would assume it's bulletproof glass, I would imagine. Something like that. But at the other end, the picture the Mona Lisa looks at is the biggest painting in the Louvre, which my tour guide told me there was over 300,000 pieces, I believe, in the Louvre art collection. So to have that thing there was pretty cool. And looking at it, it's almost like it's a bit of a Last Supper kind of vibe to it. I believe Jesus is in the picture in the middle and his disciples and then whoever else is. And it was actually a very, very nice painting. And then I'm not much of an arts person, but if you're there, you kind of got to see all that stuff, right? So I did it all. But the people, and I'm sorry if you're from France or Paris specifically, because I've heard other places in France are quite nice, actually, but just not great to me and the people who I was with. One lady who I was grabbing a coffee from told us to shut up and don't talk when she talks. So that was pleasant. My couple of people in my family too speak fluent French, who were trying to also speak French to the people there to make it easier for them, and also like help themselves a little bit too, like get more fluent in the French. And they just refused to acknowledge the fact they spoke French and spoke back to them in English. It was very, very confusing. There was obviously enough people there who were very, very nice. But unfortunately, the rudeness overruled. And I don't think I'll be going back. I don't think I'll go back. Maybe a sports event one day. Like if England are in the World Cup final, perhaps one day, and it's in France and I get the opportunity to go, then I'll go. Speaking of World Cup finals, I applied for my ticket for the 2026 World Cup. That's free if anyone wanted to do that. It's just you just type in FIFA 2026 World Cup tickets. It's kind of going to a draw and then you go from there. So that was good. And also the Women's World Cup final was on yesterday. Yes, Sunday was yesterday. And Spain 1-0 win and winning their first World Cup, beating England, unfortunately, for an Englishman. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know a lot about the women's game because I quite frankly don't. I learned a lot watching the World Cup this time around and a lot of more of the players. And this one was felt a lot different for the World Cup. And I know this is kind of the common story around the whole World Cup, but was the competitiveness of it. It wasn't USA making it to the final again. It was England and Spain. And then you also had Nigeria, who had a very good World Cup. Canada, unfortunately, didn't do very well, but you see them get knocked out, the Olympic gold medalists, and that shows you the competition that was there. Obviously, the US went out on penalties, which was a bizarre way to go out, just crazy, the way that Sweden scored that last penalty, basically a millimeter over the line. So I think just big props to the women's game in general. I think this last, I would say since 2021, I believe that's when the European Championships were, for the women in England. I think since that point, maybe even the Olympics too in Tokyo, that's big steps have been made in the women's game from what I've seen. And maybe you know a little bit more about it than I do. And if you do, please educate me on it. I'd love to keep continuing to learn more about it. And I know on DAZN they have the UEFA Women's Champions League. So I think I'll tune in a little bit more to that, to be honest. I've been intrigued. It was obviously difficult from a North American perspective on watching this World Cup, especially in the later stages. The games were very early in the morning. I believe the final was 4 a.m. in Edmonton. It's difficult to watch, but the ones where I think Canada's first game started at 9 p.m. on when they played Nigeria, I believe that was. So that one was easier to watch. But when I was in England, I was able to watch a few more games. I watched Brazil play. I believe who'd they even play? I can't remember. Portugal, one of the teams, when they played the US and they hit the post, in the last couple of minutes of the game there, which would have eliminated the US from the World Cup. So much easier to watch in England when the game started 9, 11 and 1 p.m. So that was good. So big props to the Women's World Cup. It was fantastic. We've now had two big events in the football world, and World Cups have been very successful in the men's, with teams like Morocco and Croatia getting all the way to the semifinals. And then the women's, of course, with Spain winning their first World Cup. So big props to all of them. In England was great. London was fantastic. I really, really like London. Saw Brentford Stadium on my way to Heathrow. That place is literally, if you don't know, maybe this is something fun you would find, but if I was you, I would look up some football stadiums and just zoom out a little bit and just see where they are, to be honest. Like Brentford Stadium, I had no idea. We just randomly drove past it on the way to Heathrow. It's literally on the side of the motorway and just in like kind of the middle of a bit of a residential area, I suppose, between some car dealerships as well. And it's just there, like a really great stadium. Can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. So Wembley from the sky. Unfortunately, didn't have time to go and check that out. But my sister-in-law had a good experience there right before the Community Shield between Arsenal and Chelsea. So, City. Chelsea, they would never get back there anytime soon anyway. Said that was really good when we were in France. We saw the Stade de France. But of course, I went to watch a Bolton Wanderers game. They played Everton. It was 0-0. Disappointing. No goals. But it was actually a really fun game. And really, obviously, enjoy watching Bolton play. The last time I saw Bolton play live was when I went back to England, 2015-16. I can't remember which year it was. Bolton played Liverpool in the FA Cup. I believe it was a third or fourth round replay. and Bolton were winning 1-0. Ida Johnson had a penalty, went in. Liverpool 1-2-1. I think Daniel Sturridge got the first goal, and then Philip Coutinho belter curled it right around. Who would the goalie have been for Bolton at the time? Maybe Ben Amos or someone like that. Bogdan, I think he was ginger, curled it right in. Nothing you could do. I think that was in like the 78th minute as well. So disappointing from that, but it was very fun to be back. Very fun to be back this time around as well at the Tough Sheet Stadium. My friend who I went to high school with in England gave us a really fun experience being in one of the suites, the 1877 suite, which of course 1877 is when Bolton was founded. So we were in the 1877 suite, got a good meal. Our seats were row P, so whatever number that is back, but we were right behind the benches. So we were actually sat within amongst the players. So right next to me was George Johnson, who is a very promising player, former Liverpool Academy player. I believe he's only 23, 24, something like that. Owen Toll was there as well, Northern Ireland international. And there was a few Everton players dotted amongst them as well. And it was a very fun experience. Everton played a rather strong team, to be honest. And second half, they switched it up, brought on all their Academy players, young players. But it was a fun game, 0-0. I had the opportunity to go to the game as well on the Saturday, but turned it down. They were playing West Brom because I'd already been to one. I wanted to experience more of England. 4-3 final to Bolton. Last minute winner from Aaron Morley. That would have been a thriller. But either way, very good to be back at the Tough Sheet Stadium. But of course, lots have happened since I left. And I've wanted to talk about a lot of it. We won't get into much that has happened in the past, to be honest. I'm just going to try and cover these last 2 weeks of the Premier League season, but not in every single team way, but in just some thoughts I have, specifically Chelsea, of course. I mean, how can we not talk about Chelsea? Manchester United, Spurs, Wolves, Brighton. I just finished watching Arsenal and Crystal Palace too, so maybe I'll give that a quick whirl right off the bat. And also just what the Premier League is right now is very intriguing to me, so we'll get into that as well. But first, quick ad.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Good ad. Hopefully it played. Sometimes it doesn't. It's always a bit awkward when I say that and then nothing happens. So there you go. Hopefully that ad was something, was there, existed. But either way, let's get into the Premier League. We are back in full swing. Two games in now. Brighton, top of the table. If I remember correctly, weren't they first or second at the top of the table last year too? I don't know. It was something like that, wasn't it? It was Brighton was a thrilling start to the year because do you know why? They're a fantastic football team. They're a great football team. Who else is up there? City, obviously, in second right now. Arsenal, third. Brentford, fourth. Liverpool, fifth. The rest is all the same. Everton, one win. Can climb all the way to 13th. But they're terrible, so maybe that won't be happening. But either way, let's just quickly talk about the... I want to just talk about Arsenal, Crystal Palace, whilst it's fresh on my mind. Most kind of about the game a little bit. I'll just quickly talk about Crystal Palace. Obviously, Palace lost 1-0 to this in this game. Sam Johnstone gave away a penalty. John Stone gave away a penalty. Martin Odegaard buried it. 1-0 Arsenal. Arsenal remain undefeated in two games against Nottingham Forest and Crystal Palace. Palace obviously have a very good team. I think they got some talent there. Obviously, Eze, Elise, Martin Gaye is good. Anderson's a very good player. Lerma's quality as well. I think they have a lot of quality. The thing they struggle with the most, which is very obvious and something they've struggled with for a while now, to be honest, they just can't score goals. And I remember when Palace came up, and a few of them remember, Andrew Johnson was just absolutely banging him in for Palace. And they really need to find somebody like that again, someone they can rely on to score. Even just 12 goals a season would be massive for them from a striker. But Eduardo just doesn't do it. Ayew isn't that guy. Eze is amazing. He should have had a penalty today. Eze, that should have been a penalty. But the problem is, when Elise isn't playing and Wilfred Zaha is gone, you're asking Eze to do a lot on his own. And today against Arsenal, he did everything he could. Like I said, should have had a penalty. Was giving it everything. Just so skilled and technical on the ball. But he's got no support at the moment. And Crystal Palace, if they want to take that next step as a club, really, really need to find themselves a striker who can bang home some goals. Because it's not going to be it. And I know Elise just signed a 4-year deal, which is very good for them, actually. Because now they can build off that and say, well, he wanted to join because we're a good club and we've got good foundation here. And I think Palace do. I know I said in a previous prediction that I do think that Palace will go down this season. That was almost foreshadowing what could have happened, I guess you could say, if Eze and Elise both went. Elise very much definitely felt like he was out the door. So I'm surprised he's still here, but good for them. But now they just need to find that striker. And I think Palace, call me crazy if you'd like, but they really need to be a club like Brighton and Brentford, no? A club that is definitely punching above their own weight, but has figured out a way to do so on a consistent basis that it's at the point now where you probably can't even say they're punching above their own weight. I think they're probably just good clubs. Crystal Palace need to be able to find that next step in their transfers. I think Roy Hodgson's a good manager and he should be able to get some good results this season. But is 12th really acceptable again? How long is Eze? I know Elise is staying, but how long is Eze going to do this now of like another mediocre season? They needed to find that striker. I know they just got that França, I believe his name is, from the Brazilian league. He's only 19. He had 9 goals last season. Sorry. 9 goals in all competitions, yes, for Flamengo in the Brazilian league. Will he get it done in the Premier League? We'll see. He's only 19. So go from there and decide for yourself, but I think Palace need a little bit more. Arsenal, on the other hand, I cannot believe people underestimated what Arsenal were capable of. It is crazy. They finished second in the league last season and pushed City, almost until the very end, until the wheels fell off. Granted, they had some tough injuries. Saliba going down. Gabriel Jesus was pretty much injured from the World Cup onwards. Just never really found it again. Now you've got this experience of being in that title race. Also signing guys like Timber. Obviously got her. That's very disappointing. David Raya to give some competition in net. Kai Havertz should be good for them. He's getting a lot of stick online right now, which I think is unfair. I thought he was decent today against Palace. It's also 2 games into the season. Give him some chance to really find his footing. Declan Rice, absolutely phenomenal player. Just dominates. He's like a rash, isn't he? He's just everywhere. He just absolutely dominates the midfield. And to be honest, not even the midfield, just box to box. He is just quality. The awareness of that guy and the sense of of where he needs to be with the ball, off the ball, whatever it may be. He just knows what to do, and I love Declan Rice. Gabriel Jesus hasn't even played a game this season, but Eddie Nketiah, I like Nketiah. He, I think he might be in a shout for an England call-up one day. I would not be shocked if he got a shout to go and play for England this season. Maybe later on in the year, we'll see how he goes. He might have to bang home a few more goals, but who knows? I think England could use maybe a younger striker to come through like him as well. You think about it, like Watkins, Wilson, kind of battling for it, aren't they? Tammy Abraham's out till January. Ivan Toney obviously out for, what is it now, 6 more months, something like that. He just released an interview as well, which I gotta tune into. To finish up on Arsenal, though, I think we're going to get a really good image of what this team is over the next 6-7 games, something like that, which seems very obvious. But when you look at the schedule, they got Fulham, who I think are a bit of a shell of what they were last season, could struggle against relegation, but London Derby, I think they'll probably win that one. Now, United, we'll get into United a little bit later, but still, United-Arsenal, always a big match when those two play against each other. Both teams typically show up, but that's at the Emirates, so should be a win, I would assume. Everton, crap. Now you've got the North London Derby with Spurs. Obviously a big game, especially with Spurs have started the season. Bournemouth after that. Bournemouth, I don't think, are as bad as people maybe will give them credit. Gary Neville said they were going to get relegated, which seems very silly of him. And then Manchester City on October 8th. They do play Chelsea on the 21st of October as well, but they're not very good, are they? So I think that's kind of the challenge there. So you got United, Spurs, City with 3 of the next 6 games, with other difficult games too. Like, I would say Bournemouth is going to be a difficult game, especially away from home. So we'll see. But I think we'll get a really good idea of what Arsenal is once those fixtures have gone through. And maybe that's the momentum they need. If they can get any kind of result against City on October 8th, then this title race is alive and well. Now, I know it's October 8th, but you would have to, maybe this is too early to call, but if they don't get a result against City, then is the race already over? We may as well transition straight into City, because watching them play, they look almost unbeatable, don't they? They had a tough matchup against Newcastle, who I think played them very, very well. It's difficult to go to the Etihad and, to be honest, only had one goal. Newcastle just couldn't find a way to score a goal, which was their biggest issue. Arsenal need to get a result against Man City, because they look to be transitioning their stars a little bit. Like, Foden's coming about a lot more. Kovacic is coming through as well, especially with Kevin De Bruyne gone. They're changing a lot of things. Gundogan, of course, too. But City are the team to beat. And Arsenal need to at least get a draw against them on October 8th to keep the title dreams alive. I think the next team we should talk about is Chelsea, because they're such a weird team. And watching them yesterday against West Ham, they were the better team. They just couldn't find a way. Scoring more than one, obviously, but just even like creating chances in the box, I found like quality chances, you know, it just wasn't there. Raheem Sterling was great. I think Pochettino may have found the old Raheem Sterling, which is fantastic, because Raheem Sterling on his day is one of the best players in the Premier League. His speed and acceleration is unmatched. Not many players in the league defensively can keep up with him in that regard. And you saw that a few times yesterday, especially against West Ham. So if Pochettino can find a little bit more from Sterling, then they got something there. Problem is, someone's got to score when he crosses it into the box, or Sterling's got to score. Nicholas Jackson got a lot of praise, and I think he actually will be good, but he needs to find the back of the net sooner rather than later. Mudrick looks terrible. I'm not really sure what they're supposed to do with him. Caicedo got a lot of stick yesterday for giving away the penalty. Is what it is. You're trying to win the ball back and all that kind of stuff. And at that point, to 95th minute, does it really matter? Time's gone. Enzo has been very good for them. Missed the penalty. It just seems like there's just, every time something looks promising for Chelsea, it just goes absolutely down the drain for them. And they do it to themselves. I've seen many stats on Twitter. Many of them are lying to, because you get those community notes now, but I believe they won 3 games in the last 30-something. It's unacceptable from a Chelsea standpoint. They've been bitten a little bit with injuries, so like Christian and Cuckoo. That is far from ideal, but they just need more. They need more from players defensively. I didn't think they were very good. I thought that goal from Mikel Antonio was very avoidable. Levi Colwell, for me, looks, he's a very, very good player. He was very good at the Euro under-21s this past summer as well. But it was soft. It was a very soft goal. And I think he played a big part in it as well. I don't know. I'm kind of torn on how I want to feel about Chelsea, because I want it to work in the sense of, I think this team has a lot of fun players to watch play football. Mudryk included in that, to be honest. Sterling as well, if he can keep finding his feet. Enzo is quality. Jackson was very good last season as well. We need to see it from him. Conor Gallagher, I like a lot. Reece James, obviously, who knows when he's going to play because he's always injured. But I want it to work from that standpoint, because I want to watch this fun team and these fun players excel. However, I also hate how they just think they can go out and just buy this player and buy that player. They signed another goalie today from the MLS. Can't remember his name off the top of my head. But I just hate how that side of things is happening, how they just think they can buy their way to success. And this just doesn't seem to be a lot of plan around it. They're spending way too much money, and they're not even spending money on that good of players, to be honest. Like, some of them are obviously good, but like $150 million for Caicedo, that is crazy. That is crazy. I mean, good for Brighton to get that kind of money, but he's not worth that. I think I would have paid 60, 70 million. The money in it is just, it's a bit outrageous. And from that perspective, I'm glad to see Chelsea fail on a consistent basis, because I think it's unnecessary to be spending that much money. There was a lot of quality at Chelsea before Todd Boehly came in and started to rip it all apart. And it just feels like the identity of Chelsea doesn't exist anymore. And Pochettino's a very good manager, and he could probably find it back. But it's not going to come easy. And I think people who thought Chelsea were going to finish in the Champions League this season are foolish compared to what the other teams in this league are. And honestly, it's disrespectful to what teams like Brighton have accomplished, Newcastle, Aston Villa, sure, we'll put them in there, even Brentford to an extent. Chelsea aren't as good as any of those teams right now. And coming up, let's see what they have in their upcoming schedule there. They've got Luton, Nottingham Forest, Bournemouth, and Villa. If they don't win 3 of those games, then they're going to struggle to get any kind of European football, never mind Champions League football. We'll move quickly on to Manchester United. And I got Spurs, Wolves and Brighton. I wouldn't mind talking about too if we can get through quickly. Just quickly on Spurs, losing Harry Kane is obviously a significant blow, but boy oh boy, is Ange football come through and thriving. That man has got Tottenham absolutely dancing right now. And a big reason why is Bissouma. Bissouma is incredible. He was so, so good yesterday against United, and it just really allowed Saar to kind of run around and do what he needed to do. He got a great goal. That man is like a rash. He is just all over the place, and I love him. He's very, very exciting to watch, and the work ethic is incredible. James Maddison is able to thrive because of what Bissouma and Saar do in the midfield behind him. Just allows James Maddison to do whatever he needs to. The pressing football is very exciting to watch. Yesterday, I didn't realize how young this team was until I looked yesterday, and Son was the oldest player in the starting 11 at 31. You've got a lot of exciting football is going to happen this season in Tottenham. I said, which was very wrong of me, that they would be a bottom half team. I think they can definitely compete for a Europa League spot this season. At best, obviously, push for a Champions League spot, but if they can get the best out of James Maddison every single week and Bissouma is able to stay consistent, I see no reason why they can't compete for European football next season again. And especially now that they don't have European football to worry about this year. Should be a very exciting season for Spurs. So the expectations is your Europa League or minimum, right? It has to be, I think. I think maybe they can even push for Champions League if they continue on the way. But that result yesterday against Manchester United was, sorry, on Saturday. I watched it on Sunday. That's why I keep saying Sunday. Very impressive. Very impressive. They got Bournemouth next, Burnley, Sheffield United, and of course Arsenal. So they've got a nice little patch here where they can gain some momentum and keep pushing and see what they can do. But it's crazy to think they lost Harry Kane and have scored 4 goals in 2 games with... What has it been now? Obviously, the Martinez goal was own goal. Saw James Maddison get both against Brentford. I think he might have. Either way, sorry, James Maddison got 2 assists. That's what I was thinking. Emerson Royale and Romero. Good start. Good start for Spurs. I'm very excited to continue to watch them. Compared to what you've watched when they've played Conte ball the last few years. Oh boy, it is a thrill to watch Tottenham Hotspur at the moment. United, on the other hand, bit of a shit start to the season, I think it's fair to say, but if I was a United fan, I wouldn't be overly concerned. Garnacho, I think maybe, can't play every week yet. Very good talent, can't play every week. They need Sancho to maybe find his foot in a little bit so they can get him in the squad and just help out Garnacho and relieve the stress a little bit from him. Mason Mount will be fine, people. Let's give him a bit of a break here. They were actually a bit unlucky yesterday against Tottenham. They should have had a penalty. I can't remember who shot the ball, but that was definitely a handball in the box from the Spurs defender. And Antony at the post right after Spurs scored the first goal. So a bit unlucky. They were obviously lucky against Wolves not to concede late in that match. That was avoided, so I guess this was karma kind of catching up a little bit. But if I'm a United fan, let's not forget, you were absolutely dreadful the first 2 games last season, and you have a win under your belt this time, two games into the season. So Nottingham Forest next, Arsenal, Brighton, Burnley. Tough little stretch. I think United will be fine. Win your home games, get a result against Burnley away. You'll be solid. Title hopes, I wouldn't grasp onto them too much. They can compete with the big dogs, I think, but they just don't have enough to hold on till the very end yet. They need to keep building this squad with a lot of good foundation. I saw there was rumors of Varane maybe going to Saudi Arabia. Hopefully that doesn't happen for them, but maybe we'll see more Harry Maguire. United fans, do you like that? Do you hate that? I would imagine hate it. But we'll see. United, I wouldn't be too worried if I were you. Wolves, who played United, and then we'll get into Brighton. They played, Wolves obviously played United first game of the season. Unlucky not to get a penalty at the end. I think the head of officiating basically came out and said that it should have been a penalty, and that ref was suspended for this week, and maybe the VAR referee as well. Good. At least you can only rewrite your wrongs, something like that. You can't redo them. I don't know. I butchered that. You know what I'm trying to say? You made a mistake. You got to work past it and move along. Wolves are interesting. Just a quick, like, you look at the goals that happened against Brighton on Saturday. 46 minutes, 51 minutes, 55 minutes. Your team falls apart. The game's done. It's 4-0. What are you supposed to do? You gotta be better defensively in that standpoint, but watching Wolves, I said they'll get relegated. I think they'll be in a relegation battle. And it's hard to 100% judge the Premier League at the moment because we haven't really seen Luton play after their game was postponed, since Kenilworth Road won't be ready yet for a home game. So that got postponed. Wolves might be okay. They have enough quality in the squad. They should be able to get them through if they can just tighten up defensively. Nunez, obviously a great player, got a red card. That was very stupid and just immature of him, I thought. Pedro Neto has his moments. Cunha, very good against United. Was solid against Brighton, I thought, too. They just need some luck. They need some luck to fall their way. And I think they'll be in the battle for relegation, but I think they could survive. They have too many good players in the starting 11. The problem is the bench. Huang came on and scored, obviously, but we'll see. Like, is Doherty going to get any better? I don't think so. It's just about trying to find the footing now. Everton next, massive game, then Palace. And then they have Luton in there as well within the next four games. So if they can find some momentum from there and Gary O'Neill can get his team having a high work ethic, which is, I thought, was something that lacked a little bit for parts of the game against Brighton, then Wolves might be okay, but we'll have to wait and see from there. Last team we'll talk about directly is Brighton. Incredibly exciting team to watch play football. Brighton and Hove Albion. Just so fun. 4-1 against Luton, 4-1 against Wolves. Easy start to the season, let's be honest, but you got to win your games. You got to win your games in front of you, and that's exactly what they've done. And can they get Champions League this season? Are Brighton a Champions League squad? I don't know yet. It's just interesting how they're able to cycle through these players like it's nothing. Cucurella, Caicedo, Bissouma, Benjamin White, Robert Sanchez is gone now too. And they just find the next guy. Solly Marsh, Matoma. It's absolutely nuts what they're able to do and just continuously have success. And it just shows how strong that system is that they have running it. Even before Roberto De Zerbi, what Graham Potter had going on, now they've been able to take that next step, which I don't think many people thought they were going to be able to do after Potter left. And they've just absolutely thrived under De Zerbi. So I'm excited to see what they're able to do. West Ham next, Newcastle, Manchester United, and then Bournemouth. But the intensity and the work ethic and just the direct football is so exciting to watch. The best team I've seen play from an excitement level so far this season. Just an absolute thrill. And I think they can push for fourth in the Premier League this season. I don't know if they'll get it, but I think they'll come very, very close and be there for the most of the season like they were last year as well. And I think they're going to finish ahead of teams like Chelsea. I think they'll probably finish ahead of a team like Aston Villa as well. So if Brighton can continue on this run, they're always a tough team, but they're going to be a tough, tough team for teams like Man City as well. Now, the last thing I wanted to quickly touch on before we wrap up this episode, just the Premier League in general. I feel like this group of 20 is, there's only one team who I think you can predict what they are, and that's Manchester City. They are the best team in the world, and I don't think there's any argument on that. Even without Kevin De Bruyne, they are quality. And think of the players they've lost as well. Mahrez has gone, obviously KDB injured, Laporte went to Saudi Arabia, Gundogan. Four players who would get into pretty much any team in the Premier League. And they're just gone, and City haven't missed a beat. I think Alvarez is going to be great this season for them. Foden looks like he's ready to take another step. Kovacic looks absolute quality. And then when you look through the other 19 teams in the Premier League, there's just questions. There's just questions. And I think unpredictability is something that's going to happen in the Premier League this season. I mean, Brighton, you look at them, are they able to maintain this all season? Arsenal, can they push for the title? Brentford, what are they going to be on a consistent basis about Ivan Toney? Liverpool, do they have enough depth? Tottenham, can they survive so long without Harry Kane? West Ham, what are they? Are they good enough? Are they not good enough? Newcastle, what are they going to be once the Champions League starts? Villa, what are they going to be once the Europa League starts? Forest, do they have a good enough squad to stay in the Premier League? Crystal Palace, who's going to help Eze and Olise? Manchester United, are they good enough to take the next step as well? Fulham, what are they going to do about Mitrovic? Bournemouth, are they good enough to be a top half team? Are they going to fight against relegation? Chelsea, when is anything going to work? Sheffield United, why you sell all your best players to Premier League rivals? Luton, you don't have a stadium. Is your squad good enough? Burnley, question marks again. We've seen them once. Is their squad good enough? Wolves, are you going to be able to defend this season? And Everton, are you going to be able to score goals this season? The only team we really, really know who they are is Manchester City. And I think it's a credit to to Pep and his squad there at City and what they've been able to do, but also just the Premier League in general and just the competition within the league. I don't think there's many leagues in the world where you can go through and say there's probably 8 teams that could finish in the top 4 this season, including City. Well, there's also probably 6-7 teams that could get relegated. The middle ground is so tight. It's such an interesting one. There is definitely 3 groups, I think, of your European contenders. Your teams are probably going to be in the middle, which is probably like a Bournemouth, a Brentford, and then maybe a Crystal Palace. Any teams who are going to be in a relegation battle. Fulham, Everton, Wolves, Forest more than likely, and the 3 promoted teams, Luton, Sheffield United, and Burnley. Although I think Burnley could be interesting. It's such an incredible league, and I love it. Next week, we got an exciting one. Chelsea, Luton, relegation battle. Bournemouth, Spurs, Arsenal, Fulham, Brentford, Crystal Palace, Everton, Wolves, United, Forest, Brighton, West Ham, Burnley, Villa, Sheffield United, Manchester City, Newcastle, Liverpool, and the weekend. And there you go. Premier League's back, baby. I'm back. We'll be back next week. I'm going to try and do these on Monday now just to kind of get a quick recap on the weekend and go from there. Maybe we'll do 1 or 2 during the week if something happens. I'm going to watch the Ivan Toney interview. I'm very curious to see what he has to say and what all went down with him. It's like a 2-hour interview, though, so maybe we'll digest that a little bit too. But for now, thank you very much for listening. Leave a like, favorite, leave a review. If you see this on Twitter, maybe retweet it. That'd be nice. But again, if you're on YouTube too, like the video. Again, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.